So friends, we're learning the Sicha of the portion of Nasai, Sicha number 1, in Likutei Sichos, volume 13. The Rebbe begins with the premise that we know that every word of Torah has to be eternal and relevant. So even those areas in Torah that only happen once upon a time, during that particular period of time, have to have lessons and relevance forever, for every Jew. So for instance, the Rebbe zeroes in on the discussion in the beginning of the portion of Nusso, the counting of the family of the Levites, and the Torah discusses how they're counted, the three different families, the family of Gershon, Kehat, and Merari, which were the three sons of Levi, and they're counted, and what they had to carry, what each one's job was. Gershon would carry the coverings, the tapestries of the temple. Merari carried the crushing, mostly the boards and the beams of the temple. And Kehat carried the holy objects, the table with the showbread, the altars, the menorah, etc., and the ark itself. So the Rebbe says, what is the lesson and the relevance of the fact that the Levites were counted? Their counting nominally happened once at that time. But no, if it's in Torah, that is something that every one of us can take a direct lesson from. So the Rebbe in this Sicha actually gives two lessons, as we shall see. A lesson to each of us in impacting our surroundings, and a lesson to each of us in impacting ourselves. But let's first begin. The Rebbe says that we know that the journey of the Jewish people, the wandering, so to speak, in the desert for 40 years, was not just because God punished them, that they can't go right into the land, so they have to wander around. If they needed to be punished to wait 40 years before they can go into the land, they could have waited in a different country. They didn't have to be in a desert. The fact that they spent those 40 years of waiting to get the promised land in a desert was much more for a purpose than a punishment. And the Rebbe explains that the purpose was that by the Jewish people, and especially that first important, holy, powerful generation of Jewish people, spending, journeying, and camping throughout that desert for an entire generation, they transformed the desert from negative to positive. They did it in a simple sense. A desert is a place where, as the verse says, Lo yashav adam sham, man cannot live there. It's a place where nothing grows, it's barren, it's lifeless. And here, 600,000 males, families, so it's millions of people, did live there. And miraculously, things grew. They had plenty of food and produce. So this desert, in a very literal sense, was transformed from desert, from barrenness, to a city, to a place of life fit for mankind to dwell. And by extension, spiritually, the desert, which represents a place that's barren, that's lifeless, a place of snakes and scorpions and all of these things that represent sin and darkness and unholiness and lifelessness, which is all really synonymous one with the other. And by our journey for that entire generation of 40 years in the desert, they transformed it. They took klipa, as the language is, unholiness, impurity, death, snake and scorpion, which is always a reference to the Yetzirah, the evil inclination, and everything about that, and they transformed it to a place of life, holiness, goodness, even godliness. When the verse states that the desert, Midbar lo yashav adam sham, a desert is a place where man cannot dwell, in Hasidism, it uses this to refer also to God. Adam ha'elyon, the supernal man. A desert is symbolic of a place of sin, of evil. Everything that is symbolized through snakes and all the other things that we mention. And the supernal man, God, is not, so to speak, comfortable in the proverbial desert, which is represented by the actual literal desert. And by us going into that desert and turning it into a place of civilization and of life and of vegetation and of mitzvahs and Torah and building the temple and etc., we completely turn this negativity on its head and for all time made a dent in the power of evil, of klipa, of unholiness, paving the way for Jewish people for all the rest of history to be able to overcome klipa, unholiness, evil inclination, yetzer hara, negativity, whenever they're faced with it. So that's the headline of the Sicha, and that's the general purpose of the desert. Now, in order for the Jewish people to have that power to do that, how do they do it nominally? Not only by living there, but by building the temple there, which represents the presence of God, by carrying it, erecting that temple, so bringing God's presence to that barren place, turning the place where man cannot dwell, quote unquote, where the supernal man cannot dwell, quote unquote, and making it a home for man and for that supernal man, for God himself. Now, one of the things that empowered the Jewish people and their leaders, the Levites are represent the leaders of the Jewish people to be able to accomplish all of the above, was the fact that they were counted. Says the Rebbe, the counting of the Levites is not merely to know how many there were, but much more importantly, the counting of the Levites empowered them to be able to be the leaders of the Jewish people during this taxing time of spiritual battle with the desert and whatever it represents. How does counting give them an extra power? What's empowering about counting? The Rebbe borrows from Jewish law, from Halacha. Halacha states, Dover sheb'minyan loy batal, something that's counted, something that's sold by unit, is never nullified. It never gets lost. And this is a halachic relevance in many areas of Jewish law. Just as a quick example, if two things mix and one is kosher and one is not, if the good outnumbers the bad, certainly if it outnumbers it by 60 or whatever, often, depending on what the product is, the unkosher is considered null and void. It's considered butel, nullified. It's considered irrelevant because it's so tiny. It's the language is batel b'shishim. It is nullified by 60 times the amount. Sometimes something is batel b'roiv. Even if there's a majority, it nullifies the minority and that's enough. Or sometimes, conversely, you need batel b'elef, something that needs to have 1,000 times as much in order for that which is unkosher or what have you to be considered non-existent and therefore not troublesome. But there's a concept in halacha on various levels of bittul, where something that's a minority, a tiny minority, loses its existence and it does not create a problem. However, the principle is davar shebeminyan loy batel, something that is counted, something that customarily is sold, for example, by unit, by volume, let's say a dozen eggs. Typically, you don't sell a truckload of eggs. You sell it eggs by a number. You might say that halacha would say that item can never become nullified. It can never be quantified. It can never be lost as a minority to a majority, even a large majority, simply because it is counted as an individual unit. And halacha says, "Dover shebeminyan loy batel." If something is counted, it is important. Each one is a number, each one is a unit. It never loses its sense of self. It never loses its importance, how small that number might be. Says the Rebbe that that halachic concept is applied spiritually, that by counting the Levites, now even as they embark into this vast desert with all of its vast powers of impurity and unholiness, the Levites as leaders of the Jews are counted. They will never be lost. They'll never be outnumbered because something that's counted is never outnumbered. And it will give them the power to persevere and help the Jewish people win the battle of that 40-year journey of subduing unholiness, in a sense, laying the groundwork for Jews of all time to be able to subdue unholiness in their own time and in their own journeys. So that's what the journey in the desert represents. the battle of purity over impurity, the subjugation of purity, of impurity through purity, through holiness, through the temple. And the counting of the Levites empowers them not to lose heart and to be able to win that battle, outnumbered as they might be, a small people in a vast desert. So the Rebbe now starts to give us the lessons. Lesson number one is when we're dealing with our surroundings. As I said to you before, it's also going to be lesson number two to apply it personally to our own inner battle. But first, lesson one, we look around us in our communities, wherever we may be living, and we can feel that we're living in a spiritual desert. People around us don't seem to be so interested in spirituality, in Judaism, in morality, whatever. And we can lose heart and we can feel, let's run away from this place. This is a place where the supernal man cannot dwell. This is a place where Torah, mitzvahs, goodness, godliness, morality, Yiddishkeit will never take hold. I'm out of here. And that's an easy reaction. It's easy for us to fall into that pothole, that pitfall of escapism and say, there's no way that I can accomplish that. Says the Torah, that wherever a person finds themselves, that's for a purpose. The language is, from God is the footsteps of man planned. And if I'm living in this place, as barren and spiritual desert as it might seem, I need to know that I'm given the power to journey through that space and not only not lose my spirituality, but on the contrary, to transform that entire spiritual desert into a home for God, into a place where man can dwell, from desert to civilization, from spiritual desolation to a place where, quote, the supernal man can sit. Each of us has that job, regardless of what that circumstance might be. Hopefully each of us can apply this to our own circumstance. No space is too barren, too scary, too difficult, because that's exactly what the Jewish people taught us in their journey in the desert, this vast desert. You can transform it. And the person says, how? And the answer is the inner Levite, who is counted in today's Torah portion. As Maimonides says, this is a famous Maimonides that the Rebbe loved to quote over and over and over again. Maimonides says that not only the Levites, the tribe of Levites, were chosen to be special servants to God, but even any person, any Jew, if they have a generous spirit of dedication to Torah and mitzvahs, they too can become like the Levites, to be teachers and leaders and guides, to show the ways of justice and righteousness to the masses. And when someone has that attitude, rather than running away and saying, oh, I'm surrounded by this desert, nobody cares about mitzvahs here, nobody is religious, nobody gives two hoots about Jewishness, that's a cheap cop-out. Rather to say, hey, the place needs a couple Levites. Maimonides looks you in the mirror and says, you can be a Levite. Maimonides says, and the Rebbe quotes it, call Isha Shenot Veruche, any man, any one of us. All you need is a generous spirit of dedication. I'm going to be a lamplighter. I'm going to be a living spirit of Yiddishkeit, and I'm going to share it to my surroundings. You have the ability to share and to empower your community and bring and fill it with Yiddishkeit and transform it from that barrenness. But I'm outnumbered. The Levites are counted. And davar shebeminyan lebatel. Something that's counted never loses its sense of importance. Something that's counted is not important based on numbers, based on quantity. It's qualitatively important. It's essentially important. And if each of us, I guess we all have an inner Levite, but if we choose to embrace and reveal that Levite and take the role of a leadership role as a Jew, we will be unstoppable. So that's the first lesson. And then the Rebbe continues and says we can also find a lesson personally in our own inner desert. But at times, we don't look around us and see a barren, desolate, a spiritually desolate community, but we look within. We look in the mirror and we feel that we ourselves are a little bit of a desert. We ourselves are lost, wandering in the desert to plunge it. We're lost, we're spiritually barren. We don't feel that we have, there's no vegetation, there's no growth. There's no spiritual growth. We don't feel that we ourselves are a place where the supernal man is comfortable. We're losing our sense of humanity, of the superiority of mind over heart or what have you. We don't feel that we're in a good place. Maybe we have actually failed to grow spiritually. Maybe we have failed in the performance of sin, small sin, grave sin. And we come to a place of giving up, of saying, I'll never amount to anything, and it's over, I'm lost, I might as well give up. So here the Rebbe says that the Levites empower us here again. And the Rebbe says, look at the Levites. They never served in the temple before. The whole idea of serving in the temple and administering God's presence was new to them. They were just regular people till that moment. Suddenly, Moses gives them a command. You're Levites. You got to serve in the temple. You got to bring God's presence. And they could say the same argument as this person says to themselves. How can I do this? I'm no Levite. I never did this before. Just like the person who feels they want to give up because I know what I've been lately. I haven't been quite the Levite. I've been far from it. But just like the Levites, from one day to the next, became serious servants of God. There wasn't any time of preparation. Later on, the Levites were given a 5-year training period. But initially, the Levites became Levites just like that overnight. And from non-servants to God, they became servants to God. Each of us, just by the power of our resolve, can turn that page from a non-Levite to whatever level, whatever extent we've been, it doesn't really matter, to a Levite, to a servant of God, whose life, whose innards, whose home is a home that you feel the temple of God and the presence of God. And at their life and their home is a Mishkan. Is a Mishkan. The Rebbe is speaking here actually more so about our inner selves even than our homes. But I guess by extension, it means our homes as well, that we transform ourselves into a Mishkan, that we become a place where God dwells within us, and we can do it pretty quickly from being very far away from it by simply taking that resolution and turning that page, just like the Levites did, and were empowered by them, by the issue of their counting, because that's when they were, I guess, appointed to this new job and new position. And then the Rebbe continues and breaks that job down into two steps. So I know what I got to do. I got to try to transform my inner desert to a temple for God, and I'll be the Levite to administer the service of God within my temple, so God is comfortable resting within me. You might say the supernal man is now comfortable to dwell within my formerly desolate spiritual space, desert-type space, and now Hashem is comfortable. V'shachanti b'tocham, the temple is spoken of. God dwells in them in plural. So now I want to make myself into a Mishkan, into a temple, and I want to be that Levite. And I know that I can do it because the Torah teaches me that the Levites were appointed overnight. And now you want to know, once you make that resolve and you're ready to be the Levite, the job is divided into two parts. As Judaism in general is divided into two parts. There is Sur Meinah, stay away from negativity, from sin, and Asei Tov, embrace goodness, mitzvahs. Just like if I'm making the temple for God, like I'm making a home for a king, the first thing I had to do is clear away all the dirt. Dirt and messiness and ugliness is not appropriate for the king to dwell. And then, only then, can I bring in the gorgeous furniture and make the home a place where the king is comfortable. So by definition, we need those two steps in building our dwelling place for God as well. We get rid of the negative, which is sin. We sweep it out, we make firm resolutions to stay away from maybe some bad habits that we had in the past. We don't have to dwell on them and look back at them, but we have to sweep them out. Get rid of them. Sur Meirah, clean up the palace. Clean up the building that's going to be the palace. Get rid of the sin. Push it away. Firmly lock it out of our lives. And at the same time, the next step, Aseh Tov, to start embracing mitzvahs and Torah study and filling our temple with the Shekhinah, with the divine presence. So the Rebbe says that these two important steps in building an inner temple, removing the negative, staying away from sin, and embracing positive mitzvahs, are also spelled out very clearly in the Levite families. We know the Levites were three families, which were the three sons of the original Levi, namely Gershon, Kehat, and Merari. Says the Rebbe, that if you look in Hasidic teachings, you find that the three families represent these two columns, staying away from sin and embracing mitzvahs. Two of these families, Gershon and Merari, represent staying away from sin. And how so? Because Gershon means to chase away, Legaresh, it represents someone who struggles with sin and they have to chase it away. They have to constantly say no to their inner Yetzirah, their inner evil inclination. Similarly, the family of Merari represents battling sin, because Merari means bitter, like the root of from the word maror that we eat on Passover, bitter herbs. Merari means bitter. And Hasidism explains that's a step lower than the Gershon. The Gershon is the one who battles sin but wins the battle, keeps on chasing them away. The Merari is the one who's bitter because he's failed and sinned time and again. But the common denominator of both Gershon and Merari is that they represent chasing away sin. And that's why their job in the temple was sort of a protective one. Gershon carried the coverings, the tapestries, which represents to protect us from evil, to protect us from negativity. It's a general protection. Similarly, Merari, they're the ones who carried the boards of the temple to protect us. You might say the boundaries that one has to set on themselves to avoid sin. That's Gershon and Merari, chasing away and bitterness, struggling with sin, overcoming sin, carrying the coverings, the tapestries, creating an aura of protection from above and from around us, that we stay away from negativity. That's represented figuratively through the coverings and the krashim, the boards of the temple. And then finally, the family of Kahas, which the word Kahas means to gather together. Kahas represents the place in a person when they're totally together, when there is no inner struggle, there is no battle. I'm doing the mitzvah. My kahas is shining. I'm able to quiet my merari, my inner bitterness of past sin. I'm even able to quiet down my gershon, my inner struggle of chasing away and constantly telling the bad guy, the Yetzirah, to leave me alone for a few minutes. And now I'm focused on kahas. I've got it together. All of my inner faculties joined together in a Torah prayer and study. You might say kahas represents that we're not so conflicted. And even if we still are, because we're not a tzaddik, but we're able to overcome the conflicts that Gershon and Merari represent, that they're chasing away, and for the moment have a kahas moment. Where right now I'm davening, I'm learning Torah. Right now I'm just all here. There is no other struggle. There is no other distraction. And that's why they carried the details of the temple, the holy objects, the ark, the menorah, the table, the showbread, the altars. They carried the actual mitzvahs, whereas the other two families carried the generalities, the coverings and the boards, which generalities represent protective measures. Keep us all protected. Keep us all together. Like a general picture that protects a home, the general protection of the Jewish people, the kahas, They were charged with the details of carrying the many vessels in the temple, which represent the details of our positive behaviors, many, many different types of mitzvahs that we can do in our lives, and they fill the home with godly light. So the Rebbe concludes that we can each be a Levi, and we can each turn our own inner, sometimes a desolate, a barren a type desert into a home for God. But we need to know, A, we're empowered to do so. We have an inner Levi who in today's portion is counted and therefore can never be overpowered and outnumbered by the world from without or from within, our own demons, our own negativity that sometimes seems to outnumber our goodwill. We have the power to do that. But to do it, we have to be prepared to take those two steps. Deal with the negative and clean it up. Put it in check. And do whatever it takes to keep it at bay. And at the same time, the next step to begin to embrace more and more mitzvahs, and we fill our own person. And by extension, as the Rebbe spoke earlier in the Sicha, our surroundings, our communities, with Shekhinah, with divine presence, prepare the world to be a home for God.